right, guys. This is insane. They're 102-54. They're two wins away from the greatest season in San Francisco history. Heck, why stop there? Three wins away from tying the 1905 New York Giants and four wins away from tying the 1904 New York Giants. Hell, why not win five and set the all-time record? Oh, my God, Mike. I mean, we spent the whole first 90 minutes talking about the 49ers. Now we get to bathe in the glory of Gabe Kapler's Giants. I know we got to worry about Brandon Belt's hand, but first and foremost on the UMA guest line, good morning, Mike. Unbelievably happy are you about this baseball team?
Ecstatic.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yep.
Now, you know, I'm looking at this, you know, way back in, you know, June or whatever. They're, you know, they're the first team to 50 wins, 60 wins, 70, 80, 90. Well, when they're back about the 50 wins, I'm thinking, let's take a look at September. What's it look like? And I'm going, Milwaukee, Dodgers, six in Coors Field,
right.
10 against the Padres. The six in Coors Field was the one that scared me the most because I'm thinking, man, maybe what, go 3-3 and be happy? They go into Coors Field twice in September and they sweep.
No, it's insane.
That's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, you take a look at what the Rockies have been doing. They've been kicking everybody's butt in their yard.
Yeah.
You know, they played the Dodgers tough. They won one out of three, but they should have won two. I mean, they just feel like they're a playoff team when they're at home, and the Giants go in there and they smoke them twice, sweep 6-0. I don't even know what's going on. I'm watching this game thinking, it's going to happen. They're going to win. I don't know how they're going to do it. And then all of a sudden, Stella's knock 3-2, and then here comes the big bang by Crawford, a 3-run oppo. And you're thinking, who are these guys? I'm ecstatic. It's so much fun. They did something that I didn't think they could do.
Mike, to your point, the Rockies are 46-32 at home. You take these last six games from the Giants, the Rockies are 20 games over 500 at home. Other than those six games, they're 46-26. So that's how remarkable it is. It's not like, oh, it's the Rockies. No, the Rockies are 20 games over at home. So we've had so many painful memories there through the years. 1998 sticks out among others. Ryan Spielberg's 09 sticks out. For them to do this is yet, I mean, Mike, I don't know whether it was the walk-offs against the A's or beating Kenley Jansen in a Dodger Stadium or beating Walker Buehler on that Sunday game. They just keep topping themselves and sweeping the Rockies twice in Denver is right up there in the list. So, yeah, let's go. And we start with the guy who started last night, yesterday afternoon, Kevin Gausman. Mike, we've talked about him for the last couple of months, and we always ask you, Mike, what's up? What's up? What's up?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? 11 strikeouts and six innings
that's
yesterday.
That's what's up. Yeah, 11 Ks.
What'd you think? What'd you see?
Yeah.
Well, he'd been flirting with it for a while. You know, there for a while, when he went into the tank right after the All-Star break with the split, I mean, you couldn't find it. It'd be one out of every five or six pitches would be a good one. And then even then, no guarantee it was going to be in the strike zone. It forced him to go to other pitches. And to his credit, you know, he didn't panic. He kept trying to find it. But then, you know, he pitched off of it, which, you know, there for a while, I mean, he was a completely different pitcher than he was early in the year. Early in the year, a two-pitch guy. And he didn't need to go anywhere else. But now, all of a sudden, you couldn't really count on the split being – what it was the first half. So he went off to other pitches. And he kept him in games. You know, granted, he wasn't the dominant, you know, number one ace that could take down any other number one ace. But he was efficient enough to be able to, you know, eat up a few innings. He didn't go into the sixth inning a whole. I think he had three outs. I was reading the Andrew Baggerly article today. And I think he had only three outs after the fifth inning for, like, the last five starts. Well, that's not enough, and certainly his bullpen has—he owes him dinner. Let's put it that way. But then yesterday he goes out there, and it's like early on, game on, and there was electricity to everything, and that included his slider, which, you know, we haven't seen that be really a pitch that he could try and finish somebody out. More of a pitch that could steal strikes. So that's kind of what it was, because everybody's thinking about the split in the fastball, but not now. Now it's another weapon. He was swing and miss, 11 strikeouts. He gave him three hits at Coors Field. Are you kidding me? So, I'm ecstatic. I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, okay, perfect timing. here we go. He gets one more start of the regular season, and then, you know, game on. If they can get to, you know, that game in the first game of the playoffs in the LCDS, then, you know, or NLDS, then there we go.
Well, you're right, and it's so great to see. It's just everything clicking. Now the only thing, and we'll just get this out of the way early, is the Brandon Belt, you know, and listen, we don't know, right? We got to wait on the x-rays, but...
That was tough.
How you process that? I mean, there was early thought. Crawford talked to reporters after the game and said he talked to Belt, and Belt was not overly concerned. Now, I don't, you know, Mike, we've been around sports too long to know. We can't trust it until the x-rays come back, but... I don't know. Some people are mad at him for squaring to bunt. I don't know. I like a good bunt every now and then, unless you're a home run hitter. But what's your breakdown of that? Should he not have been squaring to bunt? Is it just a bad break? Are you hopeful? What do you got?
Well, I'm pissed he got hit by it. But here's the deal. Number one, he already got three home runs. Every time he steps up there, we're all thinking he's going to hit another one. Why are you bunting?
Okay, yeah. So there you go. There you go.
I don't get that at all. And all right, what happened when he turned around to bunt? The pitcher, and I forget even who it was. Let's see, I could take a look.
It was a lefty,
I guess.
It was a lefty.
Then it had to be Gilbreth. So yeah. Gilbreth, he picks him up. As soon as he turned around, he took his eyes off the target. He picks up Belt, and he throws it center cut. I mean, it would have hit him right in the sternum if he doesn't hit him in the hand. But it goes around, and it catches the inside of his left thumb, the top half, and the ball drops straight down. And it was like almost mid-90s. And I'm thinking, he's done. As soon as that hit his hand and the way that it fell from his hand, you know, you could tell if it's a glancing blow or if it's a direct hit. This is a direct hit. And your hands are so fragile, it's like, he's done. So then I'm watching Dave Greschner come out, and Gresh is unbelievable with hand injuries. Number one, the way he took his glove off, I'm thinking, okay, we got a chance here. You know, he just pulled it right off. When you have a broken hand, number one, you know it, or at least you think you do. And getting the glove off is a major deal. He just pulled it right off.
Yeah.
So then they let it settle a little bit, and then all of a sudden Gresh starts doing the push here, pull there, push there. He's going to see if he can get a reaction out of you. If he gets a reaction out of you where you wince and you jerk that hand back, bingo, we got a problem. And he never winced. He never pulled the hand back. So based on those two things, and, you know, I know the first test they gave him, the fluoroscope, was inconclusive, and they're going to re-x-ray it today. I'm feeling pretty confident about it. Plus, afterwards, and just, again, reading the comments from Brandon Crawford, his closest friend on the team, said that Belt thought it was going to be okay. He felt pretty good about it. To me, that, you know, nobody knows their body more than the athletes, so I'm going to stay pretty positive about it, but I don't know if he's going to be in there for a couple of days because it was a direct hit.
So you're just saying this right now to Brandon Belt, who's listening right now. Hey, double B, number nine, swing for the fences, no more bunts?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Write that down.
Okay.
Capital letters.
Double B. Now, you're not anti-bunt. You're just talking about the particular hitter.
I'm saying for that guy right now to bunt is crazy. The only time that I think it's acceptable is if the Giants are – he leads off an inning and they're down by three late, eighth inning, and you need base runners, and they give you the whole left side. Okay, that's a time when you need a base runner more than the home run, believe it or not. But I think right now – it was a 2-1 game or it was a tie game. And he goes out there and I get, you know, base runner, well, there's already a man on. And then he gets hit by the pitch.
Yep.
I just think that's not the time to do it.
Yeah, well, I hear you. And we can talk about his weekend prior. The two homers on Saturday night, Mike, that was just a guy staking his claim again. Now, we've been talking about MVP for Crawford. And I know Belt's not going to win the MVP, but, man, you might want to put him somewhere on your ballot at this point. I mean, Mike, 29 now, and that's in limit. He missed some time.
He did.
By Saturday night when he hit those two bombs, I mean, we're just witnessing a guy at the peak of his game, delivering when the team needs him the most. I mean, if we were doing this show Sunday morning, just think how we'd be talking about this guy.
Well, he's carrying the team, and, you know, he's carrying the team off the field as well. I mean, he is the emotional centerpiece, and everybody is looking to him to see how he reacts to everything right now. That's what happens when a leader emerges down the stretch, when a guy who is so hot that everybody just wants to sit next to him on the bus.
Yeah.
That's how hot he is. He's the guy. He's the centerpiece. Now, Crawford's been brilliant in September. They all have. But the centerpiece is Belt. And, you know, you can just see the way the team looks upon him. And so, yeah, I think that's the MVP. I do. But again, you can't discount what Crawford's done. I mean, I've been lobbying for him for MVP the whole year, and I think what his whole body of work is remarkable, and it warrants that selection. I don't know who's going to win it. Probably, Tatis is what they're all talking about, and I think that gathers steam when you start to have calmness and writers start to talk about it as if it's a foregone conclusion. That ticks me off because I think MVPs are won in September, and I think you're witnessing two guys that give great argument, Crawford and Belt, and legitimate arguments. They're carrying this club. They're doing something historically epic, and they're the centerpiece as they go into the last week. Well, that to me is MVP stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say we've talked all summer about, well, it's a September award. It's a September award. Well, guess what? They have 102 wins now. Crawford homered Friday. Crawford hit a 3-run homer yesterday. Crawford's defense is second to none. I mean, he's doing it in September. So, voters, it's up to you now, man. But, Mike, speaking of home runs, they did it. You knew it was coming. This is now the most homerun team in Giants franchise history. Mike, we need to go back to March 31st and say, hey, this team's going to hit more homers than any team in franchise history, and then laugh ourselves silly, right? I mean, so is this just Donnie Ecker, Justin Veal, and launch angles? Is everything's changed with this new regime?
Oh, definitely. I think that they've and the thing that we've talked about is the consistency up and down the lineup of the at-bat. They're the same at-bat. Not just the eight guys that are playing, but everybody coming off the bench. It's the same at-bat. They sit there. They commit to a pitch. And I can't stress it.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
That's enough. You know, everybody who's played baseball, you know, you're going to go up there and look for a fastball, and some guy throws a nickel slider or some kind of weird breaking ball at you. Even though you're sitting on that fastball, you wave through it. It's so hard to discipline you to stay committed to that pitch that you're looking for and not break down mentally in the middle of a swing simply because you just don't have the patience or the concentration to do it. And I think this is what this team does better than anybody I've ever seen. I've never seen collective at-bats like this up and down the line. I've never seen it. So in regards to the home run record, I don't think they're that impressed with it. I really don't. Cause you think about guys who get on a home run that, you know, like Belt right now, his 29 home runs into it, right? Well, he wants 30. Of course he does. It's a milestone home run. And you know what milestones mean in this game.
Yep.
So what is he? He's going up there bunting.
Yeah. Right.
So how
right,
much is he thinking right. about the 30th home run? He's not. These guys are thinking about staying with the procedure, with the process of disciplining yourself to look for a pitch, for a side of the plate, for the movement, speed, everything, and stay on it. And I think this is what this team does. And I say, yes, you applaud what the three coaches have done, because it's been remarkable that you have been able to touch an entire team with an approach and have them to buy into it. And I've never seen that.
It's incredible, Mike. But maybe even, you know, as we talk about incredible things, what if I just threw you these names? Castro, Watson, Rogers, Doval, that's Friday. Alvarez, Garcia, Littell, Rogers, Watson, Leon, that's Saturday. And then Alvarez, Littell, Doval, and Castro, that's Sunday. Mike, this army, this bullpen, we used to call it the core four. How about like the core dozen?
Yeah, the core 12.
I mean, it's like a million guys coming out, and they're all getting it done.
Right.
Well, what are we talking about with the hitters? The consistency with the approach from everybody who goes up there and takes a bat in their hand?
Yeah.
Well, you could say the same thing about this bullpen. You know, they understand their stuff. They understand how it applies. They are attackers. They get after it. They don't walk many. This addition with Castro and Doval, this is a significant thing. This feels like the 2002 Angels when they got Frankie Rodriguez. And he came up and he turned a bullpen that was pretty mediocre into the baddest asses on the planet, right? Well, this is exactly what this feels like. For these two guys, these guys are going to the playoffs. They're going to be on the playoff roster, both of these kids. And they have this incredible confidence right now. Think about what we saw at Doval early in the year. Think how far he's come. Duvall was afraid to throw his 99-mile-an-hour fastball across the plate because he thought big leaguers were better than everybody else in the world, and they were going to hit it. Well, he doesn't think that way anymore. He has got a massive dose of screw you behind every fastball, and he's attacking. And then all of a sudden, they're up there geared for that fastball coming at him, and he drops the slider from hell on him, and it's see you later. They're overmatched. And these guys, every time they go out there, Castro, the same deal. I mean, he's throwing, this guy is another guy like, you know, we could never quite figure out Yusmeiro Petit because he was throwing below the hitting speed and nobody touched him. But that short arm delivery and that unusual release point, that arm slot, and his ability to command corners, that was his deal, right? Well, now you're looking at another kid. Here's his former catcher, Kevin Castro. He's up there, and he's got this high over-the-top release. The ball's straight as a string, and it's 93 to 94, but it gets on guys. Everybody's late on it. And then he drops a 12-6 curveball that he believes in now. He's not nibbling. He's not, you know, missing by, you know, bouncing at 2 feet in front of home plate anymore. He's a weapon. So these kids, they just made a good bullpen great. I can't wait to see how this plays out.
It's remarkable. And like I said, all the names, 1, 2, 3, 4 on Friday, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 on Saturday, and then 1, 2, 3, 4 more yesterday. It's just, I mean, we've been talking about the home runs, Crawford. We talk about Bell. We talk about Poser. We talk about now with the bullpen. And so maybe the only thing, Mike, is the only, like, if you're looking at any problems, well, obviously we talked about the belt x-ray. We'll wait on that. But it's how do you strategize the rotation down the stretch? So the way I have it written out here, they go Webb tonight or tomorrow night, which there were no baseball tonight, which is a bummer. Want to see my Giants. But
I kind of feel that way, too. Anyway, you want another game, yeah.
So Webb on Tuesday, Wood on Wednesday.
Okay.
And according to Susan Slusser, it would make all the sense in the world for Scott Kazmir to go Thursday. Hell, the way he pitched, bring him on. That would leave DeSclafani Friday, Gausman Saturday, and then Webb on Sunday to close it out. Now, I suppose that leaves you wiggle room, Mike, that if there is a Monday game, you could hold back Webb and go bullpen Sunday. I don't know. Maybe you wouldn't even know if there's a Monday game until you get to Sunday, and then you go with Webb anyway. So if you go with Webb on Sunday, that means Alex Wood would pitch a tiebreaker on Monday. Or if you go wild card Wednesday, you wouldn't have Webb for that. I threw a lot at you there. Have you thought about this week's rotation? And does being two up with six to play change everything?
I haven't thought about it at all. I'm thinking about it's Tuesday when Arizona steps in. That's all I'm thinking about. Okay. You know what? That's exactly what they're thinking about, too.
Yeah.
The beautiful thing about it is that whoever takes the mound right now, they have confidence they're going to win. That's the key. If you have one or two, three guys in the pen that you feel are win days and the other two are hold your breath days, then you got a problem. But when you have guys that can go out there, you no longer have to go six or seven or eight innings with this bullpen. They're saying get the ball into the fourth with a lead and we can take it from there. And that's what's come out of this addition with Castro and Duvall to an already good bullpen. So I don't even think they're concerned about it. And I don't even think the coaches are concerned about it, or Gabe Kapler. I just don't think it's an issue. They think they're going to win no matter what. And that is extremely powerful.
You know what's powerful, too, is what's going on in the Dodger clubhouse, Mike. I picked up an LA Times subscription, an e-subscription this summer to follow the Dodgers. And they've won 100, Mike. They got the best record in baseball, except for one team. I think they want to bang their heads against a wall. I think they're going crazy. I think the Giants are driving them to the edge of insanity, Mike, and they're trying not to say it publicly, but can you, the way the writers are talking about, they're like, scoreboard watching, Giants won again.
What are they going to say? Yeah, we haven't noticed. Yeah.
What do you think's really going on in there?
Well, I mean, we went through this in 1993. I mean, that race between the Giants and the Braves, I mean, there was a lot of frustration. No matter what you did, you just couldn't make up ground, and it is frustrating. But I don't think it affects any game. When the Dodgers walk out on the field, they think they're the best team in the world. And that confidence hasn't waned a bit. In fact, you know, they don't even care if they go into a one-game wild card playoff. They're confident to the point of arrogance. And that's what really, really good teams are. So, I mean, they're paying attention to it. They're ticked off a little bit because they're playing great ball and they're not getting ground. But, you know, I don't think they're overly concerned about it. I think, you know, the Giants are kind of in the same boat. Yeah, we'd love to be able to skip the wild card game, go right into the NLDS, but bottom line is I don't think they really care because they think that they can beat anybody. And that's exactly why I think they're going to win it all, because of that attitude right there. I felt that way for about 3 months now. This team's going to win it all.
Man, it's just it's insanity. And by the way, they play the Brewers this weekend. And, I mean, there's no projecting what's going on. But the Brewers will have – they haven't clinched it just yet. Oh, they did clinch the division. I'm sorry. I thought the Cardinals' 16-game win streak had made that impossible. But, no, the Brewers have clinched. So the Brewers might be – I mean, because you'd think that's a matchup advantage. But maybe Milwaukee will only be playing their starters for half the game or something.
Yeah, you know, they're going to – you can't turn on and off a sharpened edge for a team. You can't turn that on and off. You know, Tony La Russa had the speech, about 10 days ago with the White Sox, keep your edge, keep your edge. And they haven't. I mean, they haven't played well down the month of September. So can you assume they're automatically going to flip the switch and turn it back on when they get to the playoffs? No, there's no guarantee for that. And, you know, the same thing is going to be said in the Brewers clubhouse. Craig Council, their skipper, is going to say, keep your edge. And that's what you'd have to do. So they're going to come at the Dodgers. You may not get the amount of pitches you would normally get from the frontliners, Burns and Woodruff. You may not see them go into 100 plus pitches, but they're going to come at them. And every time you walk out there, you're going to want to do well, especially if you might have to play that team in the playoffs. So I don't even worry about that. I mean, I expect the rest of the way that the Diamondbacks are going to come at the Giants like it's their playoff game, and they will. And the same thing will happen on the final weekend. I expect everybody to be in there. Tatis, Machado, Hosmer, everybody. They're going to play to try and disappoint. That's what they're playing for as they've been eliminated. So, you know, it just doesn't change. And I can't worry about, and I don't think anybody in the Giants organization is worrying about whether or not the Padres are going to show up tonight in a three-gamer with the Dodgers, or if the Brewers are the final three games of the season against the Dodgers. I just don't think that's a major concern.
And, hey, Mike, it doesn't matter. Giants control their own destiny, right?
It's exactly right. And, you know what, that's how they feel. We do our thing, we're fine.
Doesn't matter.
And they think they can beat anybody right now.
Yeah,
anybody.
Yeah. They don't have to scoreboard watch if they win.
And you know what? If anybody doubts it, they can just say, we just won six games at Coors Field in September.
It's incredible, man. Mike, I don't know what to do. I'm losing my mind. This is so crazy. All right, so listen, it's all set. Let's all gather our steam for tonight.
Yeah, catch your breath tonight.
And then tomorrow we'll rev it up. It's six to go, 102 wins. We'll never see a season like it probably ever again,
yeah,
Mike.
Great.
So
that's
everybody savor it. Yep. And we will talk to you Wednesday morning.
In a bit.
Mike Kruko loving 102 wins on the UMA guest line. How about us going straight from this high?
See, I'm going Matthew Modine duality a man now. I'm soaring above the clouds like the aviator, Leo DiCaprio and all that nonsense. And now I'm coming back down to earth. Remember when he crashed a plane into a bunch of houses?
Yes,
that's me coming down,
yes,
trying for that crash landing. Cubs, whoop, just took a guy's roof off. Sorry about that.
Paulie, how can you not love the romanticism of football? There you go.
It was a great win.
Oh, no. How can you not be romantic about football?
Yeah.
All right. The man you need to get back on the horse. Listen, Niners weren't going to go 17-0. All right? I got news for you. All right? And in the Murph plan, that's right. I'm speaking to myself in the third person.
Tell me about the Murph plan. I think this is what we need right now. Let me grab a pen.
Us losing one of these two, Green Bay, Seattle.
Well, that's the Murph plan. My plan was we win last night, 3-0. That's how.
What, you don't like 12-5?
I might not. I don't know.
What?
I'll tell you when I get. No, I'm being a. I'm just being the 17
what was
game.
What was your
12
Paulie plan?
I said 12-5.
Well, then there's 5.
Yeah. I just
somewhere
don't like
along
that
the
5.
Way, there's 5. Buddy.
I don't like the 5.
All right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
So
I like 5 if it's with an 11.
Tim Ryan doing our thing. What do you got there in your hands, sir? Yes, it is.
Oh, is that Murph's plan? Okay.
I follow plans. The Marshall plan, Damone's 5-point plan, and my plan.
Well, a lot of people don't know this.
Hey, we're going to get going for Tim Ryan's plan.
There's God's plan, and then there's Murph's plan.
KMBR 1. How about T-Rock's plan? Tim Ryan on KMBR 104.5. Oh, you are listening to the KMBR Morning Show on KMBR and KMBR FM San Francisco, the sports leader, Tim Ryan. Power Hour, next on the sports leader.
How can you not be romantic about football, man?
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.